Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Alex McFarland on the 100th anniversary of the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Christians, conservatives, traditional value, moralists have been ignored at best and very often demonized and portrayed as ignorant, backward, and a lot of that journalistic slant against conservatism, truth, and let's just say it, God, it began during the Scopes trial.
Alex McFarland next. The famous case known as the Scopes Monkey Trial was decided 100 years ago, back in 1925. It took place in a Tennessee court, and many believe an important part of its significance is it helped fuel the debate between creation and evolution, which continues up to the present day. Spencer Dahlke is with author and culture analyst Alex McFarland to discuss the Scopes Monkey Trial.
For those who are maybe not as familiar about some more recent American history, would you care to tell us what the Scopes trials were?
It was July 10 through 21st in Tennessee. And it might seem unusual. Why are people today talking about something that happened outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee in the summer of 1925? But it really was kind of a seminal moment. At least 15 or 16 states had laws prohibiting the teaching of Darwinian evolution, because they believed that evolution was inherently atheistic. In fact, many of the great responses, like the great Presbyterian theologian B.B. Warfield, began to write a response, and he said, quote, "Darwinism is atheism." Part of the reason that school boards, elected officials, and theologians and clergy and denominations in the 19th century opposed Darwinism is because they recognized that it was inherently atheistic, naturalistic, and our constitutional republic presupposes not only objective morality, but the God from whom objective moral truth flows. They understood in Dayton, Tennessee, that our government presupposes the existence of God. This doesn't violate the First Amendment, by the way. And now, I always ask whenever I get thrown this, I'll say, do you know who wrote the First Amendment? And in 200 American universities, I've yet to get an answer. And so I tell them, well, the man that wrote the First Amendment was a guy named Fisher Ames, A-M-E-S. He said, and I quote, "I would that the Bible be taught in all public schools, for it is the best vehicle for teaching morals to young people." How do 21st century Marxists know more about the application of the First Amendment than the man that wrote the First Amendment? So here's the thing. The Tennessee State School Board prohibited the teaching of Darwinism in their classes because they believed, and rightly so, that evolution and Darwinism would promote atheism among young people. So the ACLU, they were looking for a way to purposely violate the Tennessee prohibition against the teaching of evolution because they wanted to challenge the constitutionality of that. So there was a part-time substitute teacher who was actually a phys ed teacher, John T. Scopes, and he was paid the next time he got a teaching gig purposely to teach evolution, to violate the Tennessee law, purposely get charged because they wanted to get this in court. He taught evolution. He was tried with a crime and fined $100. So we get to July 10 in Ray County, Dayton, Tennessee, throughout the summer of 25, without air-conditioned buildings, in a sweltering heat. William Jennings Bryan, a Christian and a professed Bible expert, and Clarence Darrow, working for the ACLU, defending John T. Scopes, an avowed atheist, they hashed out man or monkey, God or gorilla. Were we made in God's image or mud in God's absence? And H.L. Mencken of the Baltimore Sun newspaper, who was very influential in American journalism at that point, he spread the word that this was not just the state of Tennessee versus John T. Scopes. It was the monkey trial. And the bottom line, what has been the cultural import since then has been that evolution was, quote, scientific. Christianity is just this blind belief. Maybe there is a place for faith and some sentimental view of a creator and a kindly old grandfather God that we'll meet in heaven one day. But when it gets down to the classroom, smart people believe in science. Your myopic grandmother might believe in God. But the Scopes trial had more of an impact than people realize. Even though it's a century removed, it's worth looking back on. That's basically it. The Scopes trial forever demonized the Christian view of origins in the public mindset.
It's my understanding, too, that there was actually a pretty heated exchange between Darrow and Brian. Is that right?
There were a number of secularists that really wanted America freed or liberated from the Bible believers. By the way, for what it's worth, Christians, churches, and religious denominations have started more colleges, more educational institutions than all other entities combined. Jefferson started UVA in Charlottesville, Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, but the first position he hired for was a chaplain. There have been secular groups that got together and said, let's start a college. But throughout history, throughout the world, and certainly in the USA, Christians have started more colleges than all other entities combined. It must be said, the first Great Awakening produced a number of great thinkers and great schools. The first Great Awakening was less emotional, much more cognitive, solidly Christian. At least 30% of all the colonists made a profession of faith. And really, the American Revolution and our transition from being colonies under a monarchy to a representative republic was largely due to the great cognitive worldview-based revival called the First Great Awakening. The Second Great Awakening in the early 1800s was much less cognitive and much more emotive. Now, the reason I bring that up, Spencer, is because by the dawn of the 20th century, American academia was watching what was taking place in Europe, the birthplace of higher criticism. Around 1800, Friedrich Schleiermacher was a German intellectual who denied that the Bible was really God's infallible word. Schleiermacher's liberalism greatly influenced Charles Darwin and also a man named Charles Lyell, who had written a very evolutionary book called Principles of Geology. Principles of Geology influenced Darwin. Darwin, of course, wrote The Descent of Man and On the Origin of Species. And at the end of that book, Darwin said, I realize that my conclusions are very controversial. He admitted that if his view, natural selection, was true, some might assume an atheistic worldview. Even Charles Darwin said, this must be debated in the classroom, both sides be heard, the theists and the non-theists, and it can be debated openly, forthrightly, and everyone can make up their own mind. That is precisely what is not allowed in American classrooms. There was a man that was in the Department of Ed under the Clinton years. His name was Stephen Jay Gould. He was a vehement defender of naturalistic evolution. And what's really wild is there was a Supreme Court case about the teaching of creation in schools. Stephen Jay Gould said that to really do science, quote unquote, one must not allow a divine foot in the door. Now, later on, I was speaking at Biola University, and there were a lot of incredible great thinkers like J.P. Moreland and William Lane Craig and Craig Hazen, and a tape was played where Stephen Jay Gould later admitted science doesn't have to be inherently naturalistic. And they asked Stephen Jay Gould, why under oath did you say that science must be inherently naturalistic? He said, I know that's not true, but I had to say that to keep creation out of public schools. In the Scopes trial, Clarence Darrow pressed William Jennings Bryan, and he said, couldn't you believe in God and heaven and pie in the sky by and by? But when it comes to our origins, believe what we observe in the laboratory, can't we have it both ways? And William Jennings Bryan, on the stand, he admitted that maybe the flood of Noah never happened. Moses parting the Red Sea, maybe that was a nice story, but really myth. And some things we believe by faith, but true truth, we have to go to the science lab. Now, here's my point. That's called a false dichotomy. It's an unnecessary bifurcation. If we trust the Bible for our destiny, why don't we also trust it for our origin? William Jennings Bryan seemed to understand that he had made a tactical mistake under oath. He basically threw the biblical account of our origin under the bus. 5 days later, after the trial, he died of a heart attack. To this day, even, Spencer, 100 years removed, there's this assumption that we don't trust the Bible about our origins. Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 are allegory, myth, legend. It's the best wishful thinking of Bronze Age peasants. Now, I think there's great evidence for a creator. The universe had a beginning. Something had to cause that beginning. The DNA, the complexity of the human genome, is encrypted data. We've never observed data come from anywhere but an intelligent source. The point is really this, that evolution is a faith position every bit as much as belief in a creator. Evolution is not observable, testable, repeatable.
You mentioned that it was the Scopes trial that really doomed creationism in our classrooms or something to that effect. Do you think there was already a cultural movement that direction that found footing in the Scopes trial? Or do you think there was something about the Scopes trial itself that changed the hearts and minds in Americans?
There were already trends that found footing in the Scopes trial. There was a book by a great British historian, A.N. Wilson, called God's Funeral. In Europe, at least European academics, is probably 75 years ahead of America in their abandonment of God. You know, it was a result of the French Enlightenment, but also, like I said, Schleiermacher and German liberalism and higher criticism. See, lower criticism says, you know, I'm going to look at the Bible or any text. What do the words mean and what was the historical context of the writing? Words mean things. And if I want to know the author's original intent, I look at the words. But higher criticism says, no, I look at how do I feel about it? And regarding any document, whether it be reading the Bible or reading the Constitution, exegesis, ex, the Greek prefix out, I am to look at the words and I bring out the meaning that the author put there. Eisegesis, the prefix eis, ice, that means into. And we've become a world of eisegetes. The text means nothing until I project my meaning into it. And so what happened, there had been by the late 1800s and early 1900s, Europe was abandoning moral truth wholesale. And A.N. Wilson in the book God's Funeral quotes the Thomas Hardy poem, God is dead, wipe the dirt from your hands and walk from the grave. Here's the thing, the abandonment of God and truth was underway. In American academia, at least in the Ivy League, in the upper Northeast, there was a trend away from God and truth. Journalists were very complicit in trying to portray creationists as science deniers. In reality, every member of the Tennessee School Board had a college degree, and several had master's degrees. Scopes also meant a turning point in American journalism that religion and Christianity and traditional values were demonized. Dr. Marvin Alasky interviewed journalists, and several of the elderly journalists that had covered the Scopes trial when they were much younger, they said it was the disgrace of our career. Clarence Darrow did not make a stronger case, but we purposely skewed the coverage to curry favor with H.L. Mencken. H.L. Mencken of the Baltimore Sun was the kingmaker in 1920s newspaper journalism, and he was an atheist, and he was BFFs with Clarence Darrow and the ACLU. And, you know, American journalism, for much of the 20th century, Christians, conservatives, traditional value, moralists have been ignored at best and very often demonized and portrayed as ignorant, backward. And a lot of that journalistic slant against conservatism, truth, and let's just say it, God, it began during the Scopes trial. It was a turning point in the way that journalism functioned. Now, one last thing. In the aftermath of the Scopes trial, there were, in a number of Christian camps, voices that said, look, the world is going to hell anyway. Let's pull out of the public square. By the way, 1,600 years ago, one of the smartest mortals that ever lived, Augustine, said, until we are in the city of God, we have an obligation to the city of man. But nowadays, if you talk about saving the nation, restoring the church, and being an influence in the engines that drive culture, even ministers, they'll say, oh, that's Christian nationalism. We should pull out. Francis Schaeffer wrote about this, and he called it the great evangelical disaster. In the aftermath of the Scopes trial, a lot of the, quote, fundamentalists that were the conservative, Bible-believing Christian, they said, well, we'll go and we'll create our own subculture. And I think Francis Schaeffer was right. It was disastrous that many, many, many Christians pulled out of higher education, of cultural involvement. I don't know if you've heard of these names, but like Harry Emerson Fosdick and Norman Vincent Peale, they were some pop level ministers. And they said, well, you know, the world is going to be the world. Well, we are to be the church, and let's not try to save the culture. And that's been very counterproductive because some of the actual philosophers of truth and the great opinion makers of our time have been, if not overt Christians, at least theists, because really the Christian worldview is the only thoroughly defensible worldview. In the aftermath of the Scopes trial, the cultural abandonment that many well-meaning but I think misguided conservatives committed themselves to, we need to reverse that. I know the Lord is coming back, the earth is passing away, heaven is our home. But until we get there, you know, Augustine was right. We have an obligation to the city of man. Scopes trial was a big, not only cultural and legal and societal milestone, it was certainly a great spiritual moment.
You mentioned the church after the Scopes trial pulled out of culture. Do we happen to know why it did?
Reuben Aaron Torrey had come out of Moody Church in Chicago. R.A. Torrey went to California and started BIOLA, the Bible Institute of Los Angeles. As Darwin and Darwinian thought began to dominate the classroom, by the end of the 19th century, there was this extrapolation. And here's how it went. If physical life evolved, maybe everything else evolved. Maybe morals evolved. Maybe religion evolved. Maybe even family structure. And so the Darwinian lens was how people began to see everything. So they said, well, Moses didn't write the first five books of the Bible. What the Old Testament was the Israelites' best attempt to describe their national feelings. And there was not Moses, but there was a redactor. And it was applied to the Gospels as well. The assumption was God didn't give Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There was a source document. And the four Gospels evolved. In the 19th century, they used the term revealed religion as opposed to man-made animistic folk religions. Okay, revealed religion meant Holy Writ, the Bible. But the Darwinian assumption that everything evolves, cultural mores, food, suddenly all of academia began to be understood in Darwinian terms. So schools like BIOLA, they raised money and they had great scholars like B.B. Warfield and others to write, truth exists. Jesus is deity. The Bible is God's infallible word. What R.A. Torrey did, he commissioned a set of books that was called the Fundamentals. And I realize fundamentalist is a bad word, but in 1917, actually fundamentalist was kind of a compliment because it meant you affirm the core values of classical Christian orthodoxy. Anyway, the Fundamentals, they sent thousands of sets of these books to ministers all over America, and it was basically an apologetics biblical worldview book to try to empower ministers. It was really a valiant effort. But there was a newspaper also in Tennessee called Sword of the Lord, published by a guy named John R. Rice. In the aftermath of the Scopes trial, among some conservative circles arose a belief in radical separatism. Now, Sword of the Lord was a popular level paper. It wasn't really academic. They printed sermons of some of the great, like Charles Spurgeon and others. But John R. Rice was very, very influential. John R. Rice began to say through his newspaper, look, if you really love Jesus, separate from the world. Touch not the unclean thing. You don't listen to the radio. You don't interact with a fallen world. And I'm just going to say, for lack of a better word, there was kind of an assumption about Calvinism that the non-elect are irrevocably alienated from God. And obviously the Darwinist and the lost world, they're non-elect. So if you're part of the elect, let's separate and not sully ourselves. Now, in reality, I like what Paul did in Acts chapter 17, probably the greatest Christian that ever lived. Paul went to Mars Hill and he did not compromise his faith in Jesus Messiah, but he robustly interacted with the philosophers. In Acts 9, he went to the synagogue and Paul robustly interacted with the religious leaders. And it said Paul debated, alleging and proving that this Jesus is the Christ. So you get up to the 1960s, where the battle of worldview really hit street level. 1966, Joseph Fletcher produced this book called Situation Ethics, The New Morality. Very influential book. And the sexual revolution of the late 60s, the feminist revolution of the early 70s, no-fault divorce in California and New York, the breakdown of the family. By 1978, in the TV primetime comedy Soap, Billy Crystal was the first openly gay character. I would argue that Joseph Fletcher's book, Situation Ethics, was as big a bombshell for the abandonment of morality as Darwin's book in 1859 was a bombshell for the abandonment of creation. Here's the thing, though. By the late 50s, early to mid 60s, when we needed great Christian compelling voices in the classroom, in the newsroom, in the public square for 40 plus years, John R. Rice and the Fundamentalist had been telling a couple of generations of Christians, if you're a godly Christian, don't go into journalism. Certainly don't go into law or government. You've got reprobates like LBJ getting elected to public office, because really since the 1920s, the godly fundamentalists, they were horribly short-sighted. Generations of American young people had been told, you don't need to be a teacher or an elected official or a journalist. And that's why Francis Schaeffer called it the great evangelical disaster, that in the aftermath of Scopes, the great evangelical disaster that you and I are still trying to recover our nation from was that Christians had abandoned the public square. That's why it was so revolutionary in the 70s when Charles Colson, Jerry Falwell, Tim LaHaye, Don Wildman, D. James Kennedy, Phyllis Schlafly, Adrian Rogers, they came along and said, no, the Christians must repopulate the public square in all of her capacities. That was 50 years ago, but you and I are products of that clarion call. Spencer, I would be remiss if I did not mention one other name, the man that was my boss for 8 years, James C. Dobson. All within the space of about 1975-77, they said, look, this thing of abandoning America to the secularists is not working. Let's go back. Yes, salvation is about faith in Jesus, but culture is in the hands of those in the classroom, the media, the marketplace, the judiciary, the arts, the sciences. The trumpet may sound today, Christ is coming back, but unless it's another 100 years, let's occupy till he comes.
Considering a culture that we live in today now, there have been so many news stories that I've been hearing about, well, one of the fallouts of the Scopes trial that you mentioned is family authority versus like education authorities. And we see a lot of stories, you know, nowadays about families don't want their kids being given basically porn in their...
Exactly.
Do you think that this is evidence that evangelical Christianity, shall we say, making a difference in our culture again, or is this a passing moment?
Christianity is making a difference, for sure. Christianity is absolutely making a difference. You know, parents are asserting their rights. Parents are joining school boards. This is vitally important. See, there was a guy named Abraham Kuyper that I think he was like prime minister of Amsterdam or the Netherlands. And he talked about, quote, spheres of influence. And there is the family and marriage and parents. Well, in a secular, woke, Marxist, statist worldview, children are the property of the state. You know, that's why people like the woke pro-trans people, they don't want parents to opt their kids out of government school indoctrination. But really, parents need to assert their rights. Let me just encourage people, especially if you're a Christian, please do not believe, folks, do not cower in fear to the left that wants to silence you into intimidation by saying, oh, you're a Christian nationalist. No, we're a patriot. I love God. I love my country. If that makes me a bad guy, so be it. But we are to be salt and light. And as Jesus said in Matthew 28:18-20, teach all things whatsoever I've commanded you.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, author and culture analyst Alex McFarland. You can find much information on the Scopes trial at ChristianityToday.com. On tomorrow's program, it's Ivan Mesa on cultural apologetics.
In order to have right answers, we first have to listen well to what they're saying and then use those conversations as a way to eventually point them to that ultimate source, that longing of their hearts that they have for Christ.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.